sandstone formations carved by sandblasters, autonomous whirlwinds of grit that hollowed and sculpted and worked until the ancient limestone seabeds were marvels of fretwork. Hikers and travelers could get lost for months in hundreds of thousands of kilometers of winding, spiraling mazes. Though, of course, there was never any real danger, as family scouts were always on call, awaiting signals of distress, or just simple boredom. My sister had once delighted in leaving her own peculiar carvings on rock faces within the mazes, inviting others to contribute their own designs. None complied. Hers were too original, too enigmatic. We landed at the family's most extensive manor estate, near the equator between the belt of oceans and a low, ancient mountain range. Our ship spread itself out for maintenance on the landing cradle, and embodied ancillas of many sorts greeted us, along with representatives of the lower-ranking families that shared and conserved the planet on our behalf. My father did not introduce his unfamiliar-looking son or explain his presence, as no doubt he had neglected to explain my years of absence. The first evening after our return, my sister joined me on the lakefront veranda of the main domicile and sat next to me as the tiara of three small, brilliant suns sank below the horizon, casting all in a shimmering twilight. There followed an unusually bright display of aurora. I could almost make out the additional refraction caused by the fields that protected us from the nastiest radiations of those small, brilliant dwarf stars.
"Did you ever find your treasure?"
she asked gently, touching my arm. If that was meant to divert my gloom or otherwise cheer me, it did not. "There is no treasure," I said.
"No Organon?"
"Nothing remotely like that."
"Everyone around here is acting very mysterious of late," she said. "Father in particular. It's like he's carrying the weight of the galaxy on his shoulders."
"He's an important builder," I said.
"He's been important since I can remember. Is he more important now than he used to be?"
"Yes," I said.
"How?"
"I'd like to know more about that myself."
"Now you're being mysterious."
"I saw things. Terrible things. I'm not sure how much I can explain without causing trouble."
"Trouble? You love trouble."
"Not this kind."
"Time to change the subject," she saw.
She looked me over with that combination of half-concealed appraisal and kind judgment she had inherited from our mother.
"Mother wonders if you plan to redeem your mutation and reshape yourself," she asked.
"No," I said. "Why, am I especially ugly?"
"Before we females are betrothed, a little slumming between rates is almost mandatory. You have a brutish aspect that would suit a few of my friends perfectly. Do you plan on becoming a warrior?"
Now she was teasing. I ignored the jibe, but felt a twinge at the real possibility. "My life is no longer my own," I said. "Perhaps it never was."
A sharp retort almost came to her lips. I could tell by her expression that she was on the verge of saying I was full of self-pity. She would not have been wrong, but she subdued the impulse, and I took the unspoken advice to heart. After a long moment, as darkness fell, the nebulae grew brighter in our accustomed eyes, and the veranda was subtly lit and warmed from beneath. She asked, "What really happened out there?"
It was now that Mother appeared, walking with her perpetual and almost ageless grace across the veranda. She motioned for another chair and, when it formed, sat beside us with a long, grateful sigh.
"It's good to have my finest children all with me again. All here at home," she said.
"Bornstellar was about to tell me what happened on Edom," my sister said. "Edom. Would that were all to the story. We have punished your swap family for allowing the influence of a lifeworker to lead you astray.
Astray. My sister luxuriated in that word. One last late aurora waved its slow banner, suffusing her smooth face with a flowery pink glow that plunged a barb of regret through me. I would never again share her innocence, her sense of adventure. "And I certainly hope to pass along a few of the council's finds," Mother added. "We may yet lose this world because of your adventures, Bornstellar. I hope they were worth it." "Mother!" My sister seemed surprised and distressed. I was not. I had expected this moment for most of my return journey. "Is any sort of telling allowed?" Mother asked. "You left Edom. You were advanced to maturity by a disgraced warrior servant." "By the Didact," I said.
"The dissident Promethean, banished from the council?"
"Victor over humans and Sanshum, protector of the Ecumene for 12,000 years. My other memory recalled this with no pride, only a sense of regret that more could not have been done.
"Is it all true?"
Mother asked, her voice soft and a little frightened. The tale of my travels and adventures had been told to her in no depth, apparently, and with major deletions.
"It's true."
"How could you allow yourself to be so misguided?"
"Edom isn't far from Erde Tyrene. I went there to seek treasure. I was led to believe there might be precursor artifacts, but I found nothing of that sort. Instead, I was guided by a pair of humans to the Didact's cryptum." My sister's esteem grew.
"A warrior cryptum? You opened it?"
"And helped to revive him. He did not call down punishment. He recruited me." My mother tied together the obvious knots of the story.
"All this was the librarian's scheme, perhaps?"
"It seems so."
"Then under the compelling influence of an ancient leader, you joined the Didact's cause."
She was trying to put a kind mask on the whole, in her view, sordid episode.
"He, no doubt, required your help to accomplish his peculiar ends, and because of your youth, you could not have understood how that might complicate your father's work and cause great harm to our family."
"My body isn't the only thing that's changed," I said. "I learned much that is hidden from manipulars, and even most forerunners. I learned about something called the Flood."
My sister looked between us, uncomprehending. Mother's expression shifted in an instant from patient sadness to stiff formality.
"Where did you hear of that?" she asked.
"Partly from the Didact, and some from the Domain itself."
"Then you have experienced the Domain," my sister said. "And from the perspective of an ancient warrior, what's that like?"
"Confused," I admitted. "I haven't integrated my perceptions. The knowledge is primitive at best, and I can't go back without further guidance, I think. At any rate, I haven't accessed the Domain since my armor was taken away on the Sanshum quarantine world."
"Quarantine?" my sister exclaimed. "I've heard about the Sanshum. Was it marvelous and sensuous?"
"Enough has been said of that."
Mother looked around the veranda and seemed to be surveying the entire estate through her ancillas, as if anticipating council spies, more fines, and even more severe correction.
"I've heard of the Flood. It was a mysterious stellar disease that caused radiation anomalies. It severely damaged a number of Forerunner colony worlds in the outer reaches of the galaxy, several centuries ago." This seemed to cost her considerable effort. I saw clearly the burden that had been placed upon her in the last few months. I could bear responsibility for only so much of that burden.
"We must await the judgment of your father," she finally said,
drawing back her survey, no doubt to the relief of ancillas around the planet.
"Fathers change, too.
He looks as if he's been groomed and tutored for great advancement, I said. Did the master builder mentor him for his last mutation?
Enough!
Mother cried, and stood. Dozens of little servant units scattered. With a shiver, she suggested we retire to contemplate the mantle before spending the hours of darkness in private study. Then she walked out quickly, scattering the units again, and left my sister and me under the faint wisps of nebular glow, and stars both diffuse and sharp, as if caught behind a sweeping, broken veil of tattered fog.
What is happening to this family?
My sister asked.
It can't be all your fault.
Even before you left.
Mother's right, I said. What is the flood?
She asked abruptly, her instincts sharp.
Mother seems to know something. I certainly don't.
I shook my head. Frightful stories concocted for political gain, and perhaps that's all.
Was I now misleading my own sister?
With a shrug, I added, I defer to Father's judgment.
Oh, do you now?
She said. We parted at the gate to the veranda, and I returned to my room, high in a tower, looking out over the nearest Disk Sea, its rim surrounded by cascading waters beneath the ever-changing gallery of our sky. Newborn stars, dying suns, the great turmoil in which forerunners had seen first light. I had done nothing for my family. Perversely, I now felt more connection with the Didact than I did with them. And even more perversely, perhaps that was how I would redeem myself to family and forerunners alike. How many betrayals could it take to go full circle? It was now even more imperative that I learn who I actually was and what I was about to become. No one could tell me. No one could teach me. Chapter 29. That night, and many after, were tumbled and confused. I sat surrounded by gently flickering displays that delivered little of the information that I requested and needed. The domain was still a closed puzzle box. Sometimes I felt its touch, but never long enough to immerse myself or study its nature and contents. Instead, I watched the sky, tracking the re-entry trails of hundreds of builder transports coming and going. So many ships of late, so much activity. I had always known my father was important, but suspicion had blossomed into certainty that he was in fact crucial to the Master Builder's plan. So much hatred directed at the warrior servants. What part did Father play in their reduction? Was he aware of the damage to our traditions, to the protection of the mantle itself? Visions of the prisoner of Chatham Hakor, whatever that was, now loose and beyond the reach of the Didact, missing for 40 or 50 years. And, always looming, the specter of that vast, slender ring, underscored by the strange horror of Master Builder's destruction of the War Sphinxes and their impressions of the Didact's children. What I had managed to learn about the Forerunner schism was a slender thread, but still intriguing. My other memories still withheld those times from me, perhaps waiting for more sophistication or the right moment. 10,000 years ago, just after the conclusion of the Human Sanshium War, the most exalted of the warrior servants, the Prometheans, had been ascendant among forerunners, as high in social standing and power as they would ever reach. Their downfall came as a great strategic decision was being made. Behind this maneuvering lay a threat from outside the galaxy, theoretical perhaps, but terrible nonetheless. Remembering what the Didact had told me, I surmised that this threat was what humans had once fought against and defeated, or pushed back, even while warring against the Forerunners. The Flood. Of that I could still learn little or nothing, but I was sure my mother's tale of stellar disease was simply a cover. The secret of the human victory against the Flood had never been revealed. But all had anticipated that the flood would return. The master builders seemed to have asserted that a new grand strategy, and a new weapon as well, made old-fashioned warriors and armies and fleets unnecessary. Shortly thereafter, the Didact and all his fellow Prometheans were removed from the council. I presumed this was when the Didact was forced into exile and entered the Cryptum. From that time until now, over 1,000 years, warrior servants had been increasingly marginalized. Their rates reassessed, their forces and fleets and armies disbanded. Night upon night, I struggled with the limited feeds, and day after day, I suffered under the polite condescension of my father and the sad reckoning of my mother. I had hardly even begun to explore the depths of the Didact's imprint, still slowly opening and expanding within me. There was a reason for the concealment and slow unfolding. Those resources were not for my personal entertainment, nor even for my own growth and edification. They had to be buried deep against intrusive access, to be unlocked only if I returned to a position of importance, responsibility. Only if I dared. If I lost the protection of my father and fell into the hands of the Master Builder one more time, I might be dangerous to the Didact as well. My other memories could be painfully yanked out and put on display for the Master Builder's benefit, to scour for incriminating information. Perhaps that had already happened to the humans. I could not bear the thought that the Master Builder might even now be tossing aside the spent corpses of Shakas and Riser, and laying low Erde Tyrene, snuffing out potential resistance, shoving aside and burying anything and anyone that stood in his path. Chapter 30. My restlessness turned me into a wanderer. A Forerunner household never sleeps. There is no equivalent of nighttime and rest, but there are moments of repose when all retire for individual contemplation and to prepare for the next round of activities. In traditional builder households, these moments are sacrosanct. Thus, during any given day-night cycle, there are hours when the house, and in our case much of the planet, becomes quiescent. The streets and byways reduce their flow. Even the ancillas and automated systems reduce their on-call activities. But I did not. I preferred to take my exercise alone, without armor, simply to allow my developing self, whatever that might be, to communicate its direction. I was still mutating, still changing in ways none could predict. The Didact had done a real number on me. And so I walked. I paced. I explored kilometers of corridors leading to hundreds of empty chambers, chambers that recreated their elaborate hardlight decor only in the presence of Forerunners. Parts of our house and estate buildings had not been visited for hundreds of years. Many contained tributes and records of past members of our clan and allied clans, including ancestors of the Master Builder himself. I took a perverse interest in the Master Builder's relation to my family and learned through reactivated displays, pitifully enthusiastic about finally being observed, of great contracts and political alliances stretching back 25,000 years, long before my father's inception. I spent many hours listening to a small, slightly dotty ancilla devoted to cataloging and researching the historical consequences of my family's millions of contracts and constructions. A diminutive, fading sapphire figure whose edges barely cohered, her resources had not been updated or renewed for the last 3,000 years. Yet she remained on duty, ever hopeful of serving, faithful beyond reason, but increasingly eccentric. She toured me through the records of more than 1,000 worlds transformed by my father and his builder cohorts, and then unveiled, with obvious pride, even greater contracts. Dozens of stars harnessed by containment and collection fields, including, it seemed, the ingenious quarantine around the Sun Shum system. In these records, to my great interest, were hints of large-scale weapons. Under the old name of Faber, the Master Builder had partnered with my father in creating and offering up these designs to the Council. Expunged from the records were any indications of Council approval or denial of these weapons. None took on the final, ring-shaped aspect of the great halos, however. 1,000 years of politics and progress. My father had never bragged about his works and influence, of course, and as a manipular, I had never shown much interest. But I understood now how he had been able to secure my return. Yet this was not explicitly what I was seeking. My restlessness had its own motives. What I was becoming, who I was becoming, had a separate set of curiosities, and I indulged them. The problem with being potential is that one contains multitudes of outcomes, candidates vying to become final personalities, and as the hours and days passed, the strongest ruled for a time until toppled by others even stronger. Matters would be coming to a head soon enough. One of me would suffice and rule, supplemented by the unfolding wisdom of the Didact. During one long repose, 200 domestic days after my return, I came upon my father and a visitor under a seldom-used nave and cupola reception chamber, halfway across the main length of our household, about 10 kilometers from my own tower chambers. I happened to be crossing on a skybridge connecting 2 higher floors in that wing, beneath the cupola, when I heard voices echoing from 100 meters below. One voice was that of my father, clear and precise, but not at all commanding, rather unexpectedly subservient. I cautiously leaned over the railing. My father and another builder, both free of armor, were engaged in a heated conversation. They obviously did not wish audited or recorded. The local support services had been shut down, leaving floors and walls frosted with cold. The other builder was much younger than my father, a first form, much as I would have been had my mutation proceeded normally. Despite his youth, he seemed to speak with considerable authority. Curious indeed that one so young could command an audience with my father. I managed to catch little more than half of what was being said. "More incidents in the outer reaches, 12 systems lost in the last 300 years, and traces remain of the test bed near Chatham Hakor, even after 43 years. Decimation of Sanchum, uprising insufficient cause, trial pending. Charges of gross violation of the principles of the mantle." Was he referring to the Master Builder? "A Metarch level Ancillus assigned to the testbed device sent to Chatham Hakor. Both went missing after the action against the Sanchum. Vote of no confidence in the Master Builder's leadership." And then my father, his voice rising loud and clear in the vast space as the air currents blew my way. "How could they be used in such a way? Tuned so broadly and without safeguards. It goes against all the designers had planned and hoped for, not as final defense, but as brutal punishments." "It was your science that allowed them, Builder. The opposing faction in the Council never authorized such a use, but that is secondary to the blame of building and enabling them." I drew back, shivering not just with the chill. I knew what they were talking about. It seemed that the forces of the Master Builder had used the halo tested at Chatham Hakor to finish what they had begun with the Sanchum. I had been there. I had survived the cruelties of the Master Builder. But what of the Didact and the humans? And what of a missing Metarch-level Ancilla? These great artificial minds, far more powerful than any personal or shipboard Ancilla, usually administered the most complicated construction projects and were tightly constrained by law. There were fewer than 5 in existence, and they were never allowed to serve any entity but the Council. My other memory flared with its own anguish and anger.
"A Metarch-level Ancilla, assigned defense, commanding a halo.
has been recalled for debriefing. All but one of the installations have been returned to a parking star guarded by my own Myrmidons. I am requesting their destruction as well on 00.
All but one. A moment of crisis approaches. Days at most. Perhaps sooner.
The Didact's wisdom again, this time cold and concise. Here, the momentary clarity of sound faded, and I found myself listening to noises from elsewhere under the cupola, like distant whispers. But we were the only living forerunners in this wing of our ancient home. What I heard had to be mere currents of air in the great volume. And soon enough, snow began to fall, and the cupola's reactivated lighting systems, taking an interest in the potential beauty of the internal weather, began to highlight the swirling flakes. The building was rousing again from its temporary stupor, showing off, I thought perhaps for my father and his visitor. But when I leaned forward again, they had both departed.
Tell him. Tell him now. He needs to know.
I descended from my tower to the veranda to join my family for the first glow of morning. They wore only white shifts, allowing their armor to be polished and meticulously checked, and were taking a first meal of fruits and nuts, which, with a pang, I realized would meet with Riser's full approval. Though the Florian might also bring along little meats and disrupt my mother's peace of mind. My father stood by the ledge, looking out over our disk sea and the vast fields of lilies. Once, he had seemed impossibly large, forbidding and cold. Now he simply looked tired. Stretched too thin, even to join in the small talk of my sister and mother, which had once offered him diversion and relief.
Now.
Words came to me suddenly. I think I bear a message, I said, before I could stop myself. But I don't know whom it's for. My father turned slowly and looked at me.
Not unexpected, he said. I'm listening.
A halo released something that was kept by both precursors and humans at Charum Hakor. My father put his arm around my mother as if to protect her, the first time I had seen them engage in physical contact without armor. I found the gesture both reassuring and disturbing.
I know nothing of a halo at Charum Hakor, he said.
This is not the time for lies, father. My sister flinched, but both my mother and father remained still, perhaps shocked into silence by my insubordination. Your visitor from the council informed you. There was also a halo in the Sanshum quarantine system, I said. I saw it. Father released my mother, turned, and swept out his arm.
I need my Ancilla.
His armor floated forward. He watched impatiently as it rotated for his approval. Finally, he shoved it aside, straightened, and with an effort, his voice choked, said,
I have done all I can to protect you. But they... This has taken you away from our family, our rate, our shield of society and law. And now you question my judgment. Is this truly you speaking?
What is the Flood? My sister asked again. Father turned on her swiftly, as if to reprimand her, but his voice choked off.
We meant to protect the entire galaxy, he finally managed. Builders have been designing and planning for this since before I was born. Many have failed and been demoted. After 3,000 years, my team and I succeeded. Our Master Builder took that work and advanced it to field testing in a way that apparently has met with the disapproval of the Council.
My mother looked between us, dismay turning slowly to horrified realization that a turning point had been reached.
What did he do to the Sanshum?
I asked. What's a halo? My sister asked.
It's a giant ring, I said. A horrible weapon that destroys all life. Enough about that has already been said, my father proclaimed.
His look was both sad and challenging.
Charum Hakor
seems to be a matter of grave concern to the Council. So, messenger, what did you find there?
A cage built by precursors, maintained and strengthened by humans before our war with them, I said. But a halo destroyed those protections, I think. And the captive it held was released. My father lifted his hands in dismay, then turned away. His armor attempted to follow.
That was never a possibility in my design. They changed its tuning. It's the negation of neural physics, far beyond...
His voice trailed off.
What is a halo?
This time it was my mother, who almost screamed the question. She removed herself from his grasp and stood apart.
A final defense, my father said. I designed them. The Master Builder commissioned 12. Our guild built them.
He turned back to me.
Is it the Didact who sends me a message?
I made contradictory motions, but said, yes.
Have you information about this captive? Have you seen it?
I shook my head, then nodded, again confused by an upwelling of memories not my own. I'm not sure. The Didact might have communicated with the captive once. I think it was originally preserved by humans and San Shum as a threat to be exercised in case of their imminent defeat. An ultimate weapon. Like your halos. I firmly met my father's defeated gaze, feeling a deep familial pain that would never heal. At this moment, I hated the Didact beyond all reason.
Well, messenger, here is a message for you. A request has come from First Forms, serving on the council,
father said.
First Forms? That young?
Mother asked, astonished. My father said it was the way now in the council, as many elders had resigned in protest or disgrace.
They want you to return with them to the capital. I denied that request, as is my right as your father. I had hoped we might find a way to reclaim you, rework you, return you to being our son. But I see now that that is impossible. I hardly see any remaining son at all, only a mouthpiece for the warrior servants.
Who made these requests? Mother asked.
After an exile of 1,000 years, the Didact has apparently once again been placed in charge of Forerunner defenses,
my father said.
He asks for Bornstellar. And from far outside the galaxy, a life worker called the Librarian has also requested our son. They seem to work in collusion. I no longer have the standing to deny them. I myself may soon be indicted by the council.
Both my sister and my mother looked at him in dismay.
But you assist the Master Builder, my mother said.
His time of power is finished, I'm afraid.
My father stooped to one knee, a posture I had never seen him assume before, and faced me fully, his eyes narrow and dimming with inner pain.
I am ashamed not to have been with you, to serve as your mentor.
It was not our choice, father, I said.
That does not diminish my shame. There are great changes to be made, long past due. My generation and generations before me have made serious mistakes. And so it is right for our traditions to pass. But I would have liked to have my son bear our family's deepest and most precious patterns. Perhaps when you return, with your permission, I can remedy that.
The honor would be mine, father.
Still and all, it's likely our son will soon understand more of what happens in the council than I do. Our guild itself faces interdiction. My mother stood again beside my father and clasped his arm. My sister took a position closer to me. "All but one," I quoted. "What does that mean?"
"We have only 11 halos accounted for. One is missing."
"Along with a Metarch-level Ancilla?"
"Apparently. All part of the Master Builder's indictment. You are scheduled to testify against him. The Council will send its own vessel to pick you up."
"When do I leave?" I asked.
"Very soon," my father said. "Our time grows perilously short."
Chapter 31. There's foolishness, then there's recklessness, and soon after follows madness. My father's words seemed to set off sparks throughout my brain and body. I had worried that the Didact might have been executed. Now, he was in power, not in exile, but restored.
"They would not do this except in the worst possible circumstances. A missing halo."
I bade farewell to my mother and sister, then sought out my father in his north-facing studio, where he was surrounded by project models, both virtual and physical. They now brought him no comfort. That much was obvious. He accepted my embrace. We rubbed cheeks as of old. Once my skin had been softer than his. Now it was rougher.
"You are the bastion of our family," he told me. "You will redeem all. You go with my hopes, my dreams, and my love."
"I go proud of my family and of my father," I said. A streak shot across our sky, and our planet's protective shields opened a glittering gate, like a ring of precious stones, through which that streak now passed, slowed, turned upright, hovered above the nearest disk sea. A council ship, ornate and supremely fast and powerful, its shape like a double upsweep of winds cast in gold and bronze. I had not seen one in 5 years, and had never traveled in one. A transport flyer blipped from the side of the council ship and covered the distance to our sky dock in a few minutes. My father and I parted without further words. I looked back only once, to see my mother and sister on one parapet, wearing ceremonial gowns that hovered about their armor, blue and silver with streaks of vibrant crimson. And on another parapet, I saw father, tall and steady, against the red and violet sky. My eagerness to rejoin the Didact and perhaps meet the librarian felt perverse, even cruel. I look back now and wish my memory of those last days on my family's planet would leave me forever, for they bring only an extraordinary pain. I never saw my family again, alive and free. Chapter 32. No one could ever call a council ship luxurious or frivolous. Members of the council served for 1,000 years, and during that time took vows of personal abstinence and austerity. But at no point did power elude them. And that was the prime character of a council ship. Silken, immediate, unconstrained power. I learned upon arrival that this ship was named Seedling Star. Diminutives aside, it was the most extraordinary expression of Forerunner science I had ever had an opportunity to examine up close. The Didact's memory quietly confirmed that in all but weapons, it eclipsed any of the ships ever allocated to warrior servants. I was escorted along lifts and enclosed tracks by 2 guards of the Council's own select security, designated by sleek black and red armor. Through translucent walls, I saw unfamiliar automatons speeding along their own tracks and tubeways. Some were decorated in the most alarming insectoid carapaces. But more surprising still were the numerous embodied and heavily armored Ancillas. I had heard of warrior servants utilizing such during battle and for other special tasks, but we encountered hundreds spaced throughout the ship, floating in serene quiescence, in apparent low power mode, their blue, red, or green sensors dimly aglow.
They will come alive in an emergency. They can replace human commanders if necessary. They are a vital portion of the Council Metarchy, the overall network of ancillas that support the Council. But compared to a Metarch-level ancilla, these are mere toys.
I could not explain my reaction. They somehow repelled me. With polite firmness, the guards led me to elegantly simple quarters deep inside the ship. They then instructed the quarters to extrude a new set of armor, black with green highlights, the colors of a special advisor to the Council. My father had once been one, thousands of years before my birth, and now it was my turn. Unless these were mere spares being recycled for a peculiar guest.
Not likely.
Acquaint yourself with your feeds and knowledge bases, the senior guard instructed, pointing to me, then to the armor. They are extensive. Will I access all Council resources? I have no such answers, the guard said with a glance aside at his fellow. Old ways change rapidly now. They departed, and I waited for a moment before allowing the armor to surround me. I was almost afraid to view the ancilla, afraid of finding more blocks and restrictions, more obstacles to prolong my agony of half-knowledge. But when she appeared in the back of my thoughts, I recognized her instantly. This was the librarian's ancilla, the one who had lured me, tempted me, the one who had been loaned by the librarian to my swap family, the one who had led me to Erde Tyrene. My first reaction was anger. You started all this, I cried aloud, though that was hardly necessary. Here, I am truly your servant. I am liberated from the metarchies of both the Council and the librarian.
And the Didact?
The ancilla flashed her confusion. This was somehow a difficult question to answer. We are in dangerous circumstances, she said, but improving. I will assist you without prior instructions and answer any questions you may have.
And who ordered you to do that?
The librarian, the ancilla said, but she is no longer my owner.
We'll see about that. Will you open the domain to me completely?
At this, she flickered again with ancillary emotion. It seemed at first she was embarrassed, perhaps distressed. And then I read her display as expressing true frustration, something rarely witnessed in ancillas.
Is that a no?
I persisted. The domain is in flux, she said. No reliable connections are being made for any forerunner, no matter their rate or form.
Is somebody going to blame me for that?
It seems to be symptomatic of a disturbance in our immediate past or immediate future. She froze. Frustrated, I stood within the black and green armor for a moment, then flexed it, feeling its smoothness and strength, but wondering if, in fact, it was malfunctioning. Slowly, the ancilla returned, steady again, calm and composed, and said, "No answers available for prior question. Apologies for my delay. There is a meeting scheduled in 1 hour. I have been told you need to prepare by being brought up to speed on current Council personalities and politics. You have already met the Master Builder and witnessed a first-form Council member speaking with your father, have you not?"
"You know I have," I said. "You know all I know."
"Some parts of your memory that may be used in testimony before the Council are closed to me. And, of course, I have no access to that part of you which once belonged to the Didact. I hope it does not impede my usefulness."
"You won't spy on me?"
"No. Or guide me according to the librarian's wishes." "No."
"But you're here to instruct me in forerunner politics," I concluded, feeling slightly queasy. I had never shown any aptitude or liking for such studies. In politics, there might have been treasure for others, but never for me.
"Yes, with apologies," she said. "Now, let us begin." Chapter 33. The first form counselor sent to escort me, the same one who had spoken with my father under the cupola, was only a little older than me, 20 domestic years at most. He strode onto the platform overlooking a direct view panorama of my family's world, addressed himself first to three members of the security team, then turned to me and smiled. This unseemly rictus shocked me. The humans might have been capable of such, but a first form forerunner and a counselor at that. I met his slight bow and chest-touch salute with one of my own, executing it, I must say, with practiced grace. "You are quite a sight, born stellar makes eternal," the counselor said, regarding my, I thought, distorted form with actual admiration. "My name is Splendid Dust of Ancient Suns. My colleagues call me Dust. Is your mutation acceptable?"
"It is what it is," I said, a puerile maxim. Again, the rictus. I did not like it.
"I have expert ancillas who can render you minimal adjustments, cosmetic mostly, but I must say, this combination of traits has a distinct attraction."
"Combination?" I said.
"A scan upon boarding confirms that you neatly combine mental and neurological structures of warrior servants and builders with a touch of lifeworker." "That makes sense. It was a lifeworker who equipped the ship that guided your mutation and, I understand it, the didact himself who supplied the imprint."
I listened and said nothing, judging that here was a forerunner who liked to talk and liked to dominate a room quickly and easily. All at once I had been admired, assessed, addressed in familiar tones, and put in my place, as someone who could use a good adjustment or two. But the didact within me was not easily suppressed. "Which of my patterns derives from a lifeworker?"
"Let's find out."
Splendid Dust, I could not bring myself to think of him as mere dust, called up three tiny ancillas who hovered behind me on the bridge and prepared to take samples and guide probes. "None of that," I swung around in some alarm. But Splendid Dust smiled again, then waved them off.
"Mysteries and surprises," he said. "We can find out later, when it's appropriate, when you decide. But we are not here to measure or understand you. We are here to transport you to the capital. You have been summoned by the council to testify. What do the didact's memories tell you of forerunner defenses, past or present?"
"Very little for now," I said. "I remember and understand only what the didact would have understood at the time of my mutation."
"No doubt your ancilla has informed you the domain is experiencing difficulties."
"Yes."
"The council has stored a great deal of archival and even accounting material in the domain. Now we can't reliably access any of it. Fortunately, a ship like this carries sufficient knowledge to serve us for now."
"May I ask a personal question, counselor?"
"Ask away."
"Your smile?"
"I am part of a new pattern, more natural. Some call it atavistic, but rather than being subjected to many mutations over a matter of centuries, we undergo an economical series of changes over a single domestic year. Our endpoint is less rigid, less distorted and ornamental."
"Who's we, counselor?"
"We come from builder families mostly, but a few among us are warrior servants."
"Be wary."
The didact would, of course, object to this deviation from tradition. At least, I presumed that was the cause of his reaction. Splendid Dust continued. "This leaves us with fewer inherent distortions of both anatomy and mind, fewer prejudices, some say, less imprinted wisdom, as we have fewer mentors. We were, in fact, supposed to supplement that deficit with studious use of the domain, but that's difficult now. I feel the loss."
"How many more mutations will you undergo?"
"None," he said. "In a way, I am like you. We are what we are."
And he smiled again. In silence, we studied the curve of my family's world. "Will I ever be allowed to return?" I asked after a few moments.
"I wouldn't forbid it. Practically, who can say?"
I studied him. He did not seem to mind. In their range and flexibility,
His expressions reminded me of both young manipulars and human beings. I wondered if that was a good thing. No, I didn't like it much. And yet I liked humans, mostly. Then we were shunted out of planetary orbit, and my family's world grew small. Within a few more minutes, the Council ship harnessed a great deal of vacuum energy to flatten the curve of our stellar orbit. And the planet where I was born vanished completely.
How did you become a counselor? I asked.
A number of my peers have been given, you might call them brevet appointments. My appointment is temporary.
Revolutionary Party. What about the Master Builder?
Are we in a state of war?
Forerunners have been in a clandestine state of war since the Didac defeated the human forces at Sharm HaKor.
War against the Flood?
Soon enough, those details. Now, however, we are about to institute a Supreme Mantle Court. The Phylarch of Builders has reinstated the Corps of Warrior Servants and joined with them to call for judicial proceedings. Matters both of law and strategy will be decided by the Council and the Court.
No such proceeding had ever occurred in my father's lifetime, much less my own.
Not good.
Not good,
I echoed that internal judgment. Perhaps, but necessary, the counselor said.
When may I learn more about this state of war?
Soon, I hope.
Is the Flood upon us?
Ah, the Flood. For 10,000 years, that threat has propelled the strategy and politics of Forerunners everywhere, and distorted some of us to the point where we would violate all we have stood for. We are now far more aware of what the Flood was and what it has become. Most knowledge gives strength, Bornstellar. This knowledge, however, has nearly driven us mad. And I'm concerned it may have the same effect on you, with your warrior imprint and all.
He afforded me the same focused expression with which I had been scrutinizing him, and then smiled once more. Why?
I asked. Because we have been told to give you and your Ancilla access to all the information carried in this council ship. Information withheld from all but a few forerunners for thousands of years. I myself have only been privy to key parts of it for a few months.
With that, the young counselor had two of the ship's guards return me to my cabin to begin what he called, with a twist of his lips, my period of enlightenment.
Chapter 34. The physical journey between my family's world and the capital of the Ecumene ordinarily takes less than 2 hours. For reasons not immediately explained to me, even traveling in the super-fast council ship, our trip took 3 days. All of space-time in this portion of the galaxy, perhaps all of the galaxy, was still disturbed. More than 15 times, we experienced the unavoidable effects of slipspace jump and reconciliation. An ordinary journey might have entailed one, or at most, two passages. The relief of being out of the possible clutches of the Master Builder seemed to open up substantial parts of my imprinting. Perhaps my other memory was coming to trust me as well. I stayed to myself, using the extra time to explore the possibilities of self-discovery and integration. My cabin became my universe. At last, certain streams within the Didac's memories of the Flood opened to me, a welcome if gradual flow of memory and knowledge. I had come to understand the Didac enough that his sympathy for vanquished humans and San Shum did not completely surprise me, and he had indeed felt sympathy, even regret. The war had not been a fair fight. With the Flood ravaging human systems on one side and a tide of human migration away from danger pushing them into Forerunner territories, a grand tragedy had been inevitable. The Didac felt this acutely. As to the nature of the Flood, in every natural circumstance, living things engage in competition. This is a prime directive for those who uphold the mantle. It is not a kindness to diminish competition, predation, even war.
Life presents strife and death as well as joy and birth, but forerunners, in their highest wisdom, also knew that unfair advantage, mindless destruction, pointless death and misery, and imbalance of forces can retard growth and reduce the flow of living time. Living time, the joy of life's interaction with the cosmos, was the foundation of the mantle itself, the origin of all its compelling rules. And the flood seemed to demonstrate a tremendous imbalance, a cruel excess of depravities. Certainly humans and San Shum had felt that way. The flood first arrived from one of the Magellanic clouds of stars that drift just outside the reaches of our galaxy. Its precise origin was unknown. Its first effects upon human systems in the far reaches of our arm of the galaxy were subtle, even benign, so it seemed. Humans suspected it was conveyed on ancient starships, clumsy in design but completely automated. The ships had neither passengers nor crew, and carried little of interest but uniform kind of cargo, millions of glassy cylinders containing a fine, desiccated powder. Humans found wreckage of the ships on uninhabited and inhabited worlds alike. The cylinders were carefully examined, using the most stringent cautions, and their powdery contents were analyzed and found to be short-chain molecules, relatively simple and apparently inert, organic, yet neither alive nor capable of life. Early experiments demonstrated the potential for psychotropic effects in some lower animals, but not in humans or San Shum. The primary animals affected by the powder were, as it turned out, popular pets in human societies. The Feru, lively and gentle creatures first found on Faun Hakor. Very small quantities of the powder induced changes in the Feru that improved their domestic behavior, made them more affectionate, not so much docile as cleverly charismatic. Soon enough, on an emerging black market outside the control of human governments, Feru treated with these rare powders commanded a very high price. San Shum, at this point, also adopted Feru as pets. For centuries, dozens of human and San Shum worlds bred and powdered these animals, without ill consequences. No researcher suspected the long-term effects of the powder, which attached itself to key points in the genes of Feru and began to change them, while at the same time improving their behaviors. What would soon become the flood first manifested itself as a peculiar growth found on roughly a third of all Feru treated with the powder. A kind of loose, soft fur grew between the shoulders of the pets. It was regarded by breeders as